see each one of you here, especially those who have been gone. Trust that we are gathered together again today in the name of our Lord Jesus, that He is here and is in our midst by His Spirit, and that we would heed His counsel. Seems like we've had a lot of comings and goings in our circle here recently, and good to have Leland back and the rest of you that have been gone. I think most of you are aware that I was gone, or just got back 2 weeks ago from 3 weeks of teaching Bible school there in Oklahoma. And you've probably heard me say this before, maybe especially after coming back from Bible school, but I've heard it said, and I think there's a lot of truth to it, that a preacher, it's better to preach from his study than to preach to study, if you follow that. In other words, we can study and study and study for something to preach, but maybe it's better if we preach from what we have been studying that the Lord has laid on us. So I've been thinking a lot about the one class that I had since then, and I thought, I think I'm taking on way too big a bite here to try to bring into one message 12 lessons. But I taught the subject of stewardship. And so I'd like to just give a brief overview of the, you might say, the doctrine, the truth of stewardship. I consider this a little bit like standing next to a pond and taking a flat stone and skipping it across. You've probably done that. And just hit a few high points and not go into depth. As I think of stewardship, that we are, we have been appointed by God to take care of the things that He has made. I think it is true that there is nothing that I have or nothing that you have that we have not received. Can you think of anything that you have not received? Now, I was thinking of something here this morning. I have in my pocket a pen and a pencil set. I just ordered these recently to replace some that were getting worn out and lost. And, these are the tools of my trade for about the last 50 years. So you have to, I don't carry a hammer with me or where I go, but I pretty well carry a pen and a pencil. Okay, so I got to thinking about these things. And God did not reach down and make a pen and a pencil and give it to me and say, here's a pen that I made for you. Now you take good care of it. No, that's not what happened. But I bought it. It's mine, isn't it? But rather than that, He gave someone, not me, He gave someone else the ability and the knowledge of how to go about making a pen and to make it. He gave me the ability to work and to earn money so that I could have the wherewithal to buy this pen. And so now it's mine, right? Because I bought it. Well, that's how we often think. But you know, we don't really own anything. We possess that which God allows us to possess. So that is what we would like to look at this morning. I think for a opening passage, I'll have you turn with me to Matthew chapter 25. And I'd like to just take the time here to read the parable of the talents. Matthew 25, verses 14 to 30. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same and made them other 5 talents. And likewise, he that had received two, he also gained other two. But he that had received one went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee, that thou art a hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast that is thine. His Lord answered and said unto him, Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gathered where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance, but from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And so, the talent here, it's rather interesting that this is, if I understand right, the term that is used here is a monetary term. But because of its usage in the Scripture, the word talent in the English language has also come to mean abilities. And so I think we can look at this passage, this parable, from both angles. The material things that God has given to us, to some he has given more, to some he has given less, but he expects all to be put to use. Or we can think of the abilities that God has given to us. And if we have time, I want to get into that just briefly. This is probably a real poor illustration, but I was thinking of being gone 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Now here there was a man traveling into a far country, and he called his servants. Well, I was gone for 3 weeks, and there with our business there at Smith Seed. When I left, I left the business in the hands of others. And they were expected to operate that business and to care for it as if it was their own. And yet not take, not take ownership of it. They were to keep in mind that they were caretakers and not owners. Now, there was provision during that 3 week period of time for them to be paid their rightful due of the labor that they had put into it. But you know, while I was gone, I would not have known if maybe an employee or several employees might have taken goods that were not rightfully theirs. You know, that things that they were using, like tools or fuel or even the bank account. They had access to that, office supplies, seed for their own lawns or whatever. You know, I wouldn't have known if a worker thought that this would be a really good time to just lounge around and not do any work. I wouldn't have known that. Now, so there's a difference between what I'm saying here and this parable that we have. But you know, when I got home, at the end of the month, everything seemed to be in order. We sat down and the various departments gave account of what's gone on in the business in the past month and what they were doing and whether they were profitably employed in my absence and so on. And, you know, suppose we would have got together. I'll pick on someone that's not here. But suppose we'd have gotten together and Jeremy would have said to me, you know, you weren't here, and I was afraid if I would run that seat cleaning machine, the seat cleaner, that I might have worn it out, and then you'd come back and you'd be unhappy. So why, I just turned it off while you were gone. Well, no, you'd say, well, that's ridiculous. I'd have been displeased. That's a little bit of the picture that we get here from this a man that traveled into a far country and left goods. Now, one thing I noticed here, and I'm sure you noticed that as well, he did not give an equal amount to each individual. Now, we could go to Luke and look at the parable of the pounds, which I don't plan to do, but there, each servant was given an equal amount, and they gained from that. But here, there was a different amount given to each one. All right. Taking that as a little bit of a background, I'd like to go now, first of all, and consider, in the matter of being stewards, that God is the owner of all. Everything that in this world, anything that we see, anything that you have, God is the owner. And this is the concept that God repeatedly says again and again in the Scriptures. And I'm going to just quickly read a number of Scriptures that verify this. Psalm 24:1 says, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. When God called the children of Israel out of Egypt and brought them to the land of Canaan, He said this in Exodus 19:5, all the earth is mine. In Leviticus 25:23, it says, the land shall not be sold forever, the land in the land of Canaan, for the land is mine. So even though God told Israel to come to the land of Canaan, you may possess this land, He said, it's still not yours, it's mine. The land is mine. Psalm 50, verse 10 says, for every beast of the forest is mine, and the cattle upon 1,000 hills. Haggai 2:8, the silver is mine, the gold is mine, saith the Lord of hosts. Ezekiel 18:4, behold, all souls are mine. As the soul of the Father, so also the soul of the Son is mine. And so we can enumerate more passages that show by the virtue of God's creation that He created the world, that He is owner. And He has not relinquished that ownership. He is still the owner, and we need to operate under His ownership. My second point is that God created all these things for a purpose. Now, you might say, well, that's a simple statement. I mean, why would He do it unless He had a purpose? But I think it's interesting that God's intent was to create the world in such a way that He would receive satisfaction and glory and honor to Himself. He didn't create this world just for my pleasure and yours. I think we need to keep that straight. The Bible is full of references concerning the creation of God. He made the heavens. He made the earth, the oceans, the rivers, the trees and plants, the birds and fishes, the animals, and finally the crowning work of His creation, He made man. Now, sometimes we'll maybe make something. I was thinking of those who like to make a little model. Maybe I've seen some model ships. David talked about ships here now this morning, but some model ships that are beautiful. And maybe someone would make one and set it on a shelf somewhere to look at. Or when I was a boy, I had a little ant farm. You've probably seen those. Very interesting. You know, just a thin plastic container with walls that you can see through, and you see these little ants just working in there, and it's fascinating. Well, God didn't make the world so that He could have something pretty and interesting to set on a shelf, nor did He make an ant farm just to watch all these people busily working. He made the world as an ongoing, working ecological system for a reason. Isaiah 45, verse 18 says, for thus saith the Lord, that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it. He hath established it. He created it not in vain. He formed it to be inhabited. I am the Lord, and there is none else. I find that verse interesting, that God formed the earth to have it inhabited. And so his original, you might say, well, I don't know if original is the right word, his everlasting design for creating the world was that it would be inhabited. And who's it going to be inhabited by? Well, it's going to be inhabited by, well, I'll get to that here just in a minute or two. Revelation 4:11 says, Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for Thou hast created all things, and for Thy pleasure they are and were created. Did God create these things for my pleasure, for yours? It was for His. My third point is, then, that after God created the world, He chose a steward. There were no application forms. Nobody would go and fill out and say, I think maybe I could do this job. But He actually chose a stewards, to take care of this creation of His. And so as God looked at this wonderful masterpiece of creation, He chose one special part of His creation to be a caretaker. And He placed man in a position to care for and to have dominion over and to multiply and to develop the potential within the elements of creation. If you think about it, everything that we see, that there's so many inventions of man and things that I have no idea how they work, but somebody has figured it out. And they have taken the material that is here in this creation and figured out how to use it, how to make great machines, things that work. We could go into a lot of things there. I'm going to read a couple verses from Genesis 1, the beginning of time, at the time of creation. Genesis 1, verses 26 to 28. And now this is the thought of God choosing a steward. 1:26. And God said, Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in His own image. In the image of God created He him. Male and female created He them, and God blessed them. And God said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. So God said, Let us make man, and I didn't check it to this, but I'm assuming that's singular. God said, Let us make man, but let them, plural, have dominion. And so I believe that God, when He made man, He was thinking of the ongoing propagation of the human race. And so I think that we can claim as the stewards of God, as having been appointed to take care of His creation, that we too have dominion over over the fish of the sea, the fowl of the air, and every living thing that moveth upon the earth. Every tree, and so on. One thing that is a comfort to me is it wasn't my idea to be God's steward. It was His idea. And so He has a plan. And what we need to do is to accept that plan and to fulfill its requirements. And so when God appointed a steward, when He appointed man as the steward of what He made, He realized that man would need to use of the resources that in this world to care for his own physical needs and body. And so God told Adam that he could eat of the herbs of the field, of the fruit of the trees. He could use the animal skins for clothing. And you know, this God that we serve, this I shouldn't say, the master. That's what I'm after. This master that we serve is not stingy. He gives liberally for our needs. He delights in supplying our daily needs. He allows us to enjoy the taste of our food. He allows us to enjoy sight and sounds and various things that enhance life in this and in the surroundings in which He's placed us. But having given us so much, allowed us to possess so much, it is not to use for selfish reasons, but to use for His glory and for the furtherance of His kingdom. And so it is by necessity, the things that we receive as a good steward, we need to return a portion of what we have received as an expression of gratitude for what we have received. You know, it seems as if that there's some things, a lot of things that are left out. We can only just go according to inferences. But Cain and Abel sacrificed early on there. They sacrificed animals, they sacrificed the fruit of the land. Somewhere in there, they must have had some instruction from God that sacrifice was to be expected. All right, so let's go then to the fourth point, the responsibility of the steward. God placed Adam in the Garden of Eden and gave him two basic responsibilities. The first was to dress and to keep the garden. And the second requirement was to refrain from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Would give us somewhat the concept that man's original responsibility involved both the natural aspects of life and the spiritual aspects of life. That which is needful for the body and that which is needful for the soul. So part of this responsibility is to carefully care for the master's goods. Adam was to care for the garden there. But another thing that God said right up front there was that the good should be increased, that there should be multiplication. And and this increase would be for personal use as well as to give to the needs of others. And we find that then in the parable of the talents that I read, that the master expected increase. And when there was not increase, if that servant had not fulfilled his duty, and he was severely punished. And so God allows us to labor to provide for our own needs, but then He gives us avenues by which we can benefit others and their needs. If the steward is idle and neglectful, the master's goods will deteriorate. It will be wasteful. So we need to care for that which is entrusted to us. Spiritually speaking, if we keep our relationship up with God and His people up to date, then that is good stewardship. Keeping in mind that just as in the parable of the talents, when the master comes back, the stewards must give account. At the end of life, we must give account for what we have used, what we have guarded, what we have increased, what we have of all that which God has entrusted to us. All right, my fifth point then is, and I've already alluded to this, that this is for the glory of God. And like I said earlier, do you think that God made the world so that He could just amuse Himself as He watched all these little busybodies scurrying about trying to do this and that and feed themselves and clothe themselves and go here and there? No, God had a much higher purpose in mind than that. And He gives, and then He receives from His stewards willingly and with a cheerful heart and with gratitude. And that brings glory to Him. I'd like to read several verses from 1 Chronicles 29. 1 Chronicles 29, verses 11 through 13. And this is the words of David. This is it says that David blessed the Lord before all the congregation. And here's part of what he said. Thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all that is in the heaven and in the earth is thine. Notice that. Now, David had a lot of accumulation in his life, but he said, all that's in the heaven and earth is thine. Thine is the kingdom, O Lord, and thou art exalted as head above all. Both riches and honor come of thee, and thou reignest over all. And in thine hand is power and might, and in thine hand is to make great and to give strength unto all. Now therefore, our God, we thank thee and praise thy glorious name. And so David was giving God glory. He was giving God thanks for all that he'd received. Now God, I believe, is glorified when he gives to his steward in abundance. And that steward uses that wisely and returns back to God with a thankful heart. I believe that God can also be glorified when material things are withheld from a steward. And maybe man does not receive that which it seems that he should receive. If he has the right response and attitude and totally relies on God for his sustenance, I think God can receive glory there. I'd like to just make reference to a couple verses on both sides of that. The Old Testament is full of the promise of material blessings to those who do his will. I'd like to read Deuteronomy 11, 13, and 14. And it shall come to pass, if ye shall hearken diligently unto my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in due season, the first rain and the latter rain, that thou mayest gather in thy corn and thy wine and thy oil. I don't know how many of you have ever noticed this, but in the book of Deuteronomy, it says there that this land that you're going to is not like the land that you come from, not the land of Egypt, where you watered it with the foot. Now, have you ever noticed that? So what he was saying was, or what Moses was telling them was, that the water that the crops are dependent on, when you get to Canaan, are going to have to come from rain, going to have to come from the heavens. Now, in Egypt, you were used to pumping with your foot, pumping the water and irrigating the land to get the water there. But it's different here. And so we find again and again that rain was a blessing from God. Psalm 65 verse 9 says, thou visitest the earth and waterest it. Thou greatly enrichest it with the river of God, which is full of water. Thou preparest them corn when thou hast so provided for it. And then Psalm 68, verse 19 says, blessed be the Lord who daily loadeth us with benefits, even the God of our salvation. But then there are times when there are material blessings that are withheld. And what do we do? What do we do then when there's great need? Habakkuk had something to say about that. In Habakkuk 3, verses 17, 18 says, although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the fields shall yield no meat. The flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stall. What is going to be the response of a child of God to no blossom in the fig tree, no fruit in the vines, no olives, no meat in the fields, the flocks will be cut off, no herds in the stall? He says, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. All right, so that's kind of a, what would you say, a foundation, a background for the doctrine of stewardship. Now, I'd like to just mention very briefly, I think I've got about eight things, and I can't spend time on these. But just some different things that in our class there in Bible school that we looked at. A number of things that God has made us stewards of. And you know, we just simply can't cover all these, but I'm going to just briefly mention them and hopefully stimulate in your thoughts how you relate to these things that God has given to you. Do you count them as a gift from God? Do you bless God for His benefits to you? Do you recognize His sovereignty and so on? So the first is life. God gives life. He gave life to all creatures at the time of creation. But to man, He not only gave life, but He gave a living soul. And so we might say, and there are people today that do this, and there's getting to be more and more states that are allowing assisted suicide. This is my life. I can do with it as I please. Is that so? No, that's not so. It's not your life. God is the owner of your life. Life comes from God. He gives it, and He takes it at His will. And so as His stewards of our life, we need to try. We have within us that innate nature to try to sustain life. And that's right. That's good. And we try to do that as far as reasonable. But there comes a time when life cannot be sustained. We know that. We follow good health practices. And we really shouldn't do those things that are dangerous. Boys, sometimes some of those daring things might not be the best stewardship of your life. But there will come a time when God will take your life, and that is His prerogative and not ours. The second thing that God has so graciously given to us is the earth. And I'm not going to give what you call a green sermon here this morning, but I do think we need to recognize that this comes from God and we need to take care of it accordingly. It is of interest that our bodies are composed of elements that we find in the earth. God made man from the dust of the ground. And so God has designed that our living, our ability to live, is one comes from the earth. And so we need to expend effort to take care of the earth in a proper manner that would please its owner. And so consequently, we dwell here. We should not abuse it, but rather care for it. You know, I think it's possible to exploit the earth, and we could give a lot of examples of those who maybe big companies that have gone in and just taken all the resources from a place and just left the place desolate. We should not take selfishly, but we should consider the needs of oncoming generations. Now, it would appear to me that God appointed Adam as a farmer. He said that Adam would till the earth. And even though we're not all farmers, we all are, our lives are sustained by that which grows from the soil. And each generation observes the seasons of the year, preparing the soil and planting the seeds and cultivating the crop and harvesting the produce. And so to work the soil is a continual reminder that we are dependent upon God and upon the seasons of the year that He has given, and that we have nothing of ourselves. We can't do this of ourselves. It comes of Him. I mean, try to go out there in the middle of the winter and grow yourself a nice crop of corn. Won't happen. It's we're dependent upon God and what He has set up. So, like I said, we're not all farmers, but God expects us to use the resources that this earth has in a vocational pursuit that will serve humanity in some way or another. All right. The third thing I would like to notice as far as that we are stewards of is the family. Part of God's directive at the time of the creation was that man and woman should be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And so when children are born into our homes, you as parents are caregivers. And that little child that comes into your home has no choice in this matter, has no choice of his existence. He had no choice of you as parents. He or she is helpless, and their needs need to be met day by day. And you know, this isn't just a weekend project. This goes on for 18, 20, maybe more years. And so when God has chosen, God has allowed a little one into your home, you are a steward of that body and soul. And I say soul because I believe we have the responsibility to direct that soul back to the giver. And so we cannot look at children in a, in a careless way or in a way that, you know, I could just use this child or neglect it according to my whims, because there will be a time where we need to give account of our stewardship in the family. The fourth thing that God has given to us is possessions. I've already talked about that a little bit. Even though God retains the ownership of all by virtue of His creation, He allows His stewards to possess. And there's many things that we, you know, we probably say we own. I mean, you could we could go out here, and I drove my 2005 Ford pickup here today. You'd go out there and say, "Do you own that?" And I'd probably say, "Well, yeah, I own that." No, that's not really quite the right terminology. It is the things that our Master has allowed us to possess, to use, to our benefit. Now, in this world, there is inequity. And Leland already talked about that. The folks there in Haiti, you feel sorry for them. You know, there's the wealth and the poverty that is found in this world today, much of that is due to conditions beyond the control of the person involved. In other words, we have, on the whole here, now I'm sure there's needs among us, but on the whole, we have a lot here. What have you done that you deserve that? You know, there's probably people in other parts of the world that are better managers and harder workers and more diligent than what we are, and yet they hardly have anything. And so we need to look at these things that we have as God-given. God expects us to use and not to abuse these things. He expects us to provide for our own household. That's very clear. But we also have not only the responsibility, but the privilege to help to meet the physical and the spiritual needs of others. Number five, along with possessions, is finances. Well, I don't really care how you cut it. We have to deal with money. That's part of life. I think it's probably pretty much true the world over. And so how we acquire it and how important it is to us and how much we desire to accumulate more of it, and whether we are content with what God has provided or whether we covet what others have, are all issues in relation to the finances that God gives to us. I'd like to read 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 to 10. But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be there with content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced them through with many sorrows. And I maybe should say here, maybe you think of stewardship as just giving money, and that's part of it. But God has given to us the grace of giving to temper accumulation and covetousness and the selfishness, that we might have a heart to give. The sixth one I'd like to mention is the matter of time. Here again, we all have time. Where did it come from? Did you buy it? You didn't go to Walmart and buy a year's worth of time. God gave us time. And what we do with our time reflects our value system. Time is fleeting. Time is precious. And as long as we're living, we all have the same hours in a day. I don't know how many times I have said, I just don't have time for that. You know what I'm saying? That's not as important to me as something else. If I don't have time, which I don't. I don't have time to do everything I'd like to do. So when we have a few moments that we call spare time, do we use it profitably? In the one book I have in my library, I'm going to just quote it, and you'll probably all disagree with it. But I think there's a point. It says this: allowing for some variations, the average person works 8 hours, sleeps 8 hours, uses 4 hours daily for daily routines. That makes a total of 20 hours and leaves a balance of 4 hours which he can use for purposes of his own choice. You're going to say, wait a minute, I work more than eight. I mean, you mothers, you'd be glad if all you had to do is work 8 hours in the home. Or, I don't hardly ever sleep 8 hours. Some of those things. But the point is that most of us have some time that we can choose what we do with that time. And so, are we filling those time slots to the best advantage? Reading the Word of God, maybe studying aspects of interest and value, developing one's talents, maybe even along the line of a hobby. You know, some of those things are fine. Encouraging others, visiting, you know, writing letters, whatever. But you say, it's my time. I can do with it what I want to. So it is. But a steward that has been given something is accountable to the giver. Number 7, talents. A talent is a God-given mental or physical ability, and each one of us has been endued with natural abilities. Now, it becomes rather repulsive if I decide what my talent is, and I want to flaunt it so that everybody knows how talented I am. That's not the point here. I think we need to allow others to discern our talents, especially young people. And you know, maybe somebody is going to come to you and say, you know, I really think you would do a pretty good job of teaching Sunday school. Oh, no, I don't want to do that. But somebody has thought that, and maybe you should consider that. Or teaching school, or, just a lot of different things. And so when asked to do something, when someone sees a potential in you, it can be for the furtherance of the entire body of the church. And we should endeavor to develop that which with which we have been endowed. A talent is not for personal advancement, but for the good of others. And we could look at the gifts of the Spirit along with this. One more, and probably should have a whole message on this. But another thing that God has given to us is the gospel of Jesus Christ. Salvation. It is ours. It is a special gift. It's the greatest treasure of all time, that we can be saved from our sins and look forward to eternity with Him. Jesus chose to propagate that message by way of His servants, by way of His followers. You know, He could have chosen angels. He could have said, well, okay, I'm going to send an angel, and the angels will tell other men of this great salvation. But no, He has placed within our care the greatest treasure of all time. What are we doing with it? What do we do it? Do we hoard it? I'm sure glad for this. I'm gonna keep it for myself. Do we bury it to keep it safe, or do we proclaim it to others? And so I trust that this overview will give you a few things to think about. To give a small glimpse of our personal responsibility to render back to God according to what He has given to us. Psalm 16, verse 12 says, "What shall I render to the Lord for all His benefits toward me?" And I think the answer to that would be our whole life, our body, our mind, our abilities, our talents, our possessions, our all. Let's have a closing song.